And then I saw there was another element of this whole drama of coming back into a worldly setting and knowing that one was doing sadhana, was that there was a tendency in me to use my sadhana as a stick to hit other people with. Not saying that they had to do what I was doing, but merely showing them that I was doing it. In other words, I had to protect my own sadhana by forcing other people to respect it. Saying to my father, I'm sorry I can't be with you, I must do my something. And you have to understand that I can't do this, and I can't do that, and I mustn't do this, and I mustn't do that. And using it to, in a way, there was an interpersonal leverage I was using it for. And I found out that there was an impurity in that, obviously, and that it, in that posture, I was saying something to other people. I was saying something about, my game is better than yours. Not just different, but better. There's an element in it of, the only word I can use is lack of humility. Lack of humility. It's funny that I should be plagued by a lack of humility at the same time that I am part of the Hanuman sect. Hanuman, who is all around here, everywhere, Hanuman is a monkey. But he's not just a regular monkey, he's a very intelligent monkey. And he was the lieutenant in the monkey kingdom. And he was a very high being in the form of a monkey. And at a certain critical point in Ram's drama, he helped Ram by serving Ram to help him get his wife back. Ram being an incarnation of God. And Hanuman's greatest joy in life was serving Ram. And his line, as you know, when Ram said to him, "Who are you?" Hanuman said, "When I don't know who I am, I serve you. I am your servant, and when I know who I am, you and I are one." And the relation to God of servant to master is one of the eleven possibilities of bhakti, or worship, or devotion. Or devotion. And the Vaishnavites, who are dualists, have many such sects which represent these different bhakti elements. And one of these sects is the sect of service. In fact, Das means servant. The name Ram Das means servant of the Lord. So the sect was one in which you serve, your whole role is that of service. And I was a servant, and I would say to people, how may I serve you? But into that crept my impurity. Because it wasn't a put-on, I wanted to serve people. But at the same time, it wasn't pure enough. It was also, look how humble I am wanting to serve you. It was a funny thing of, look at how superior, it's the next up level. It's that horrible relation of servant and master that was characterized in that movie called The Servant, where the servant controls the master. And so what I saw was that I had taken a role relationship, the servant to master one, which should have allowed me to say, not my, but thy will, O Lord. And I was using it in the service of my ego. And then, of course, I had been to India. And I had been blessed by a guru. Look at the leverage that gave me. Look at how my ego could flaunt that one. And it was so horrible to see the degree to which I could profane the things that were my pure connection, my connection to purity. I was taking the very things that were my connection to purity, and I was profaning them in the service of my ego. Now, so when I thought, well, today in Darshan, this being our last weekend of Darshans, I should say something about what it's like to go out in the world after you've been in an ashram or in a selective setting. What am I going to say? And I thought of getting holier than thou and giving all kinds of instructions. And I thought, well, where am I at in relation to that? And as I reflected more and more, I got more and more horrified about what I had to say, what I would have to say. And this afternoon, Russell Perkins came by from the Kirpal Singh Ashram to say goodbye. He was just leaving for India to go and see his master, and I got this wave of maybe I could use a quick power and change roles with him and leave him hanging around here doing this drama, and I could split for India. Mm-hmm. Go back into the womb, climb back in where it's safe. And he said, his master had said to him, written him a letter and said, just be as noble as possible. Be as noble as you can be. God will do the rest. Be as noble as you can be. Be humble. And I said, I don't understand what humility is. I said, what do you know about humility? Give me some clues, quick.
Yeah.
So he said, well, one of the things I remember that my master saying was that if you're thinking about humility, about being humble, you're not humble. Thinking about how humble you are. Well, that's obvious. That's pretty good, though. So. And then he told me that story about the fire. There's fire here. And in wrestling with them, I've been just drifting around the house and around the grounds all morning, just thinking about humility. See? And many people come up to me and they say, they tell me about their trip. And I listen to them and I say something wise and then we pass in the night. And then I say, well, was I humble? Were they humble? Was any humility involved at all in the whole encounter? You know, what has humility got to do with that one? Somebody came to see me yesterday and they said their fear, their own fear in life was that they would turn out to be nothing. And I gave them a meditation that would allow them to embrace nothingness and to be nothing and to go through nothingness to the other side of that. And there was a haunting memory for me, which I've related before, I think, about the days when I worked for my father in the railroad. Because what happened, in effect, was that I was 23 years old and I was given a huge amount of power. I was given the control of the jobs and the economic security of 16,000 people. And within about 3 or 4 months, I was so ugly in my own eyes, I couldn't stand it. Because everybody that looked at me as a symbol. And at first, I would cut through it and be friendly with people, till I saw that the power with which they saw me in a symbolic way prohibited them hearing me at a human level at all. I mean, at the level behind the symbol. And so all they would do was work it into this symbolic thing. Well, if he wants to be friendly, if the boss wants to be friendly, we'll be friendly. Right? And so finally, I fell into the drama that was called for, and I became officious and demanding. And I would say, do this, get me that. Why didn't you call me? Why didn't you tell me this? And I could hear that thing creeping into me, that horrible ugliness of like... And I got so scared at the ugliness in myself that I split from the job. because I didn't have the center inside myself to withstand the power of the imagery in everybody else's head as to who I was. Sometimes somebody comes here who is extraordinarily beautiful or handsome in the cultural sense, in the sort of almost magazine-type beauty or handsomeness. And they are pure beings, and I feel so sad for them because I realize how difficult it is for them to get beyond their symbolic value to other people. And that how many other people see them in terms of their symbolic significance as a beautiful, physical, beautiful person to make it with or to have on one's arm or to be associated with. It's the same thing as when very rich people are spiritually honest seekers, how hard it is when they are publicly rich people. Or powerful people, in the worldly sense, or tremendously successful people in any of their external game world, game senses. And how easy it is to fall into a definition of yourself that makes it all run smooth outside, but in which you lose the center, in which you have gotten caught or attached. So easy. And now I'm in a game in life. At this moment in the West, I've been prohibited from going back to India, and I'm in a game that just keeps picking up speed at an extraordinary rate. It's like a geometrical progression in terms of invitations and numbers and love and you know. And it's as if I'm living in a horrible hell of my own creation, and that at some point I desired power, fame, and love, and I'm going to be drowned in all of them. As I walked around the grounds and listened, I heard this extraordinary amount of gentleness and concern about one's own spiritual trips on people's parts, but also an extraordinary amount of egocentricity about it all. I am on my trip. I am on my spiritual trip, and where is it leading me, and how am I doing, and what shall I do next? My trip. It's my trip. Not thy trip, it's my trip. My trip. I am engineering myself into enlightenment. And watch out, don't get in my way. Watch out. Parents, friends, society, get out of the way, because I've been reading Ramakrishna and Buddha, and I'm on the high road, and the signals are all go. And get out of my way. And every time I resonated, the quality of self-centeredness, that quality of self-conscious sadhana, or almost egocentric sadhana, against the word humility. That was a very funny, jarring quality. And I told this story also, but it bears repeating at this moment, was that on the way east from California this year, I stopped at Lama Foundation in Taos, and I came in, and they do karma yoga there. That's their trip. Many hours of karma yoga each day, work, building and cleaning and goat care, milking and farming. And I came in, and I was very high status and very much loved by everybody, and I was very humble, very good and pure and beautiful and loving, and I patted everybody and loved everybody, and I mean I felt all that, and that was all good. It was not, I wasn't phony. That was all who I was too, and they were all so happy to have me there. And the night went on, and I regaled them with stories of India, and then we all went to bed. And the next morning, we had our Sufi dancing, and we did our chanting of Maitreya, and we all sat in the sun, and jobs were handed out for the day. And I thought, well, I've been on the road, I'm tired, and I have to do my meditating, and I'll just sort of open my mouth, and, you know, I think they'll respect the fact that so I didn't say anything, and they didn't say anything. They were a little afraid of me, and, you know, big holy man from the... And I got through it. I conned my way through the meeting, see? I mean, everybody was afraid to lay a job on me. I went through breakfast, and we were all very friendly, and then I thought, well, I'll go off into the woods, and I'll be with nature for a morning. That's pretty nice, you know? And I was walking into the woods, and along came Jonathan, who's a student of Zen and who was one of the collaborating people at the foundation. He said, Steve, who is the director of the Lama Foundation and who is somebody who is in a relation to me of friends, and sometimes he's sort of in a relation of student to me in certain ways, and he's a teacher in other things. Jonathan came and said, Steve and I have just been talking, and we think you should do karma yoga today. So why don't you irrigate the field, the corn? And he looked directly at me. And I thought, are they kidding? Well, who do they think they are? See, all that patting and petting and loving and how gentle and nice and sweet and kind and good I was, sure, it was all great as long as they didn't push the edge of my ego, of my trip. Well, I'm on my trip. And all these thoughts went through as we looked into each other's eyes, and he knew I knew all that, and I knew he knew I knew all that, and there we stood, see. And I went through an amazing, agonizing, all my muscles got tight, and I got, you know, and I was, all the scathing things I could say came through my head, and all of the pleading for self-pity, and, you know, for pity, I'm tired, and, you know, I want to be left alone, and I'll do twice as much tomorrow, and all my cop-outs that I used when I was a child, and about taking out the trash, or washing the dishes, or, they all went through my head, and I saw the whole drama. I've seen myself do it 10 million times, face the same place. It's your will against mine, baby, and, like, let's see who wins. Because I got a cute mind. I'll think of some way out of this one. And I got all through them, and he was still standing there. I hadn't said a word, and he hadn't said a word. I said, okay. And docilely, I followed him off to the cornfield to irrigate the corn. And I started to irrigate the corn with absolute, I'll irrigate the goddamn corn. You know, I'll show them how humble I am. And it was eating away my insides, the horror of who I was at that moment, because I had to see all that. I had to see it all. I couldn't just do, you know, I couldn't just have self-righteous anger. I had to see my self-righteous anger.
And
row after row, as each row got irrigated, my whole head kept changing around until pretty soon I was building dikes in the Roman style, and then pretty soon I was helping the Divine Mother bring water to the plants, and I was involved in the transformations of nature, and then my arm was an extension of the shovel, and then, you know, water and earth and air and ether and fire, and I was into the elements, and then, oh boy. And by the end, my mind was so blown by the whole experience. And I went up to them and I thanked them for helping me. Now, I wasn't uptight with them when they asked me to do that because I was protecting my purity. You dig that? I wasn't doing that. I was protecting my ego, straight and simple. I didn't want to be told what to do. I wanted to design my own trip. This is the way I am seeking enlightenment. And there is an element of that in me that's very strong. I say to people, I won't debate with you or argue with you. I'm not interested in what you have as a model for my journey. I know what I have to do. I'll do it. If you want to do it with me, groovy. If not, I'm sure there's plenty of places in the world where you can do what you need to do. Just don't bug me. Doesn't sound very humble to me. When I came home to my father, I was into reading the Bible and the Gita and doing my breathing and asanas, and I immediately came into the house. I moved to the cabin. I set the cabin up as much like the temple as I could, and I had my lota for water and my little jar for water, and I cooked and so on. And I would come down 2 hours a day to visit with my father. I thought that's a fair contract, and those 2 hours were from 7 to 9 in the evening. And I was protecting my purity, and he was involved in his world, and we were doing very well together. And then he'd say things like, say tomorrow I'm going to do some printing on the labels for my raspberry jelly, which he is one of his hobbies. You want to help? Well, now that's an interesting question. That would come at 10 when I would generally be doing my asanas. So I'd say, no thanks. Gee, I'm sorry, but I'll be busy. He said, oh, that's all right. I didn't want to disturb you. I just thought maybe you'd like to help me with the labels on the raspberry. And then he'd say, is there anything I can do for you? Just to give me the little edge, you know. No thanks. Everything's fine. Sure you want to stay in that drafty cabin? Why don't you come on down to the house and, you know, that big bed is upstairs, and take a hot bath. Come on, don't be so hard on yourself. And, you know, we're having a really great meal tonight, and we made it all for you, and it's all vegetarian. I know you don't eat in the evenings, but you can eat with us. Come on. Would you like to have dinner with us? Why don't you sit with us at the table? And I went through a number of days of what did it mean when I was instructed by my teacher, come and live with your father. Was I to come and create a wall, and he was to have his wall, and we were to look across the walls and shout at each other? Or was I to live with my father? You know, what level did that mean? So finally, I decided it is the responsibility of the most conscious being always to to find the way of communicating or to be more, be, totally be. And I am getting caught in my game, and so I gave up. I surrendered. And I said, you know, you asked me to work on the Raspberry Jam, I'd love to. And the next day we started to work on the Raspberry Jam, and I thought, well, this is now called Karma Yoga. He calls it making Raspberry Jam, I call it doing Karma Yoga. It's cool. And I did my mantra inside, and we got very high together making Raspberry Jam, and there we were, two beings in outer space making Raspberry Jam. Labels. And then I found out that the minute I stopped defining and confusing the inner and the outer trips I was on, I could start to do in the outer world what needed to be done as long as I didn't get confused as to the inner and the outer process and realized that if I kept my center inside, then everything in the outer world fed into my sadhana, every single thing I did. That is, I could print Raspberry Jam labels with Dad and at the same time do my mantra, which showed me that he and I were one in God and that we were in a certain place and be together so closely that the warmth between us was so high that we were like being in the spirit over the printing press, such that at the end of it, we both knew we had had a powerful moment together and in the course of which a number of labels got printed. Now, there's nothing in the Vedas about printing raspberry labels, Raspberry Jam labels. But there is something about Karma Yoga. There is something about doing what you do, but do it with your mind fixed on me. Doing what you do. What does that mean? Doing what you do. Doing what you have to do. Doing what is your thing. Now, that's a very elusive statement to say, do your thing, because that's just more fuel for that egocentric fire. What's my thing? Well, my thing is to ignore you. And the issue is to find out what my thing is, realizing that it is not my but thy will, O Lord. That is, finding out what thing has been handed to you. Not what thing you chose for yourself. Not what thing you engineer and articulate, but what thing it turns out that you were supposed to do in the drama. And it turned out that part of my thing happened to be making labels for Raspberry Jam. Turned out to be part of my thing. Now, I was helped in having this kind of flexibility by the teacher's statement to me of what I would do in America when he said, you will do your sadhana, meaning your work on your spiritual path. And I said, what will that include? And his answer was, he wrote on the slate, everything you do. And I realized that my protection in part need only be my own inner knowledge that who I was, was, quote, somebody who was doing sadhana. And that if I lecture, I lecture. And if I teach, I teach. And if I cook tea, I cook tea. And if I make raspberry labels, I make raspberry labels. And if I do breathing, I do breathing. If I do asanas, I do asanas.